Our health is in a collision of lifestyle choices and genes, so says today's guest, Dr. John Whitcomb. He has thankfully moved out of 30 years of crisis medicine, beyond matching a pill to an ill, into a genuine health care practice. I like him. He's a wise guy. So stay tuned. I'm Robin with Tributaries. Okay, John, we're just going to roll right into it. Plasmologens play key roles in many core functions for our body, and yet I doubt many in our audience have ever even heard of them. And basically, if we have a low count, the odds of many unhealthy or diseased conditions go up. So what are plasmologens, and what initiated the research?
This is totally fascinating to sort of tell the story of how plasmalogens were found. We discovered them, the world of medicine and science discovered them 100 years ago. We've known about them for a long time. They constitute 70% of the lipids in your axons, the wires of your brain, and the synapses, the connections. And you probably have something like 4 quadrillion synapses in your brain. The way they were found was a key idea, and the key idea was to do science backwards. When you do science forwards, you take a disease. What we're used to doing is you're taking any given disease, heart attack, diabetes, and you study everything you can find about a heart attack by looking at the disease. Doing it the backwards way is to say, let's check every single last one of your genes and collect all the genes on a huge population of people, and then see which genes correlate with heart attacks, going the other direction. So the Human Genome Project is now gradually bearing fruit by going that direction. Well, Goodenow says, okay, I've seen the Human Genome Project work. Let's see if we can do that with not your genome, but your metabolome, which is what your genes make. Let's look at your blood test, every single blood test. Let's take a machine called a mass spectrometer, which measures the mass of items, and measure absolutely everything in your blood. Not a Chem-12 panel, which measures 12 things. Let's measure all 15,000 to 20,000 things. So it takes huge computing power. So it's required the advances of computing and a mass spectrometer that has been wired up to do that. And then let's take 1,200 aging Catholic clergy at Rush Presbyterian in Chicago, a very famous study being done following folks as they get older, and generally pretty clean living people, and follow them as they come every 3 years for their physical exam and get one tube of blood sent to Goodenow, who puts it in his machine and measures every single last thing. And then let's look at what changes over time and what do those changes correlate with. And then you get the statisticians out there and the biostatisticians, and you say, holy Toledo. It turns out that plasmalogens drop off as we age, and they predict that you're in a prodrome state. And what's effectively happening is you've lost the sufficient number of plasmalogens, and they are causing trouble. So the next concept is, what do plasmalogens do? And this is, once you understand what they do, you understand why they're so important. They have 3 super important key functions. One is they are the most liquid lipids in your body. So they make membranes that are incredibly liquid, which means proteins inside them can move rapidly. So you can have membranes that can respond quickly. So when you think and talk and see, your brain can process all that information incredibly quickly. So you can say a word, and it comes into your mind, and you can retrieve it quickly. And so plasmalogens are incredibly liquid. That also makes them incredibly fragile. If you look at the axons in your brain, they're shrink-wrapped with 22 layers of, or many, many, many layers of cells around them to protect them. And when you bunk your head hard, you disrupt many of those wires, and we call that a concussion. So they're liquid. B, they can change shape. You can make little packets of neurotransmitter, and you can change shape, which means the packet can fuse with the membrane and put the neurotransmitter out into the space. Again, that's part of being liquid, but it's also that shifting shape. But the last and maybe the best attribute is they have a very precious bond called a vinyl ether bond that's right at the top of them that puts it on the outside of the cell. And that vinyl ether bond sucks up free oxygen radicals. And free oxygen radicals damage your nervous system. In fact, they damage every system in your body. The vinyl ether bond stops them cold. The problem is that then depletes that molecule and you have to rebuild a new molecule. You have to make more plasmalogens. Now, as we get older, we're living in an oxidizing world, and we start depleting our plasmalogen supply. And bit by bit, if you think about it, if I do a functional MRI scan on your brain, and you say the word resilience, your brain lights up with this huge little shower of activity. And if you can imagine, that's 50 different pathways of the word resilience being retrieved for you. Because there's 50 different ways you use it in sentences. But what happens if you lose one of those synapses? Now you have 49. What happens if you lose another? Now you have 48. And you have to think for a minute. And just ask anybody who's listening to you, how long do they have to think to remember a word in the last week? And many people say, oh yeah, that goes on for a couple of years. Well, that's actually one of the cardinal symptoms of cognitive decline, is we lose the ability to retrieve words. Okay, that may mean your plasmalogens are dropping a little bit. And what you see in folks with Alzheimer's is their conversation gradually shrinks and their complex words gradually decrease. And then suddenly, when they're to the point of having lost 70% of their synapses, we say, you have a disease. You have Alzheimer's disease. Or you have a disease, you have Parkinson's. What happens if I had replaced those plasmalogens? Well, going back to the Chicago study, folks with healthy, normal plasmalogens never, virtually never, as low as 2%, get Alzheimer's. Whereas if you live to 85, you have a 50% chance of getting Alzheimer's. You mean I can replace plasmalogens and prevent my getting cognitive decline? And the answer to that is yes. Do we have long-term double-blind placebo-controlled trials? No. We have short-term studies. We have animal studies. We have all sorts of lab experiments. Is it dangerous to take them? No, it's just food. Is there any risk to taking them? No, it's just food. Should we all be on them? Oh, my gosh. I have a hunch. I'm putting my money down to say yes, because the data shows if you take people in the top quartile of plasmalogens versus the bottom quartile, the chance of living 5 years, 5.9 years, 6 years, if you're a 65-year-old and you are in the bottom quartile, you have the same chance of living 5 years as a person who's 90 and has healthy plasmalogens. All-cause mortality is strongly correlated to low plasmalogens. And that comes from the fact your body has gotten into an oxidizing state. You are now starting to lose not just nerve cells, you're losing cells all over your body. They are now collapsing because they can't protect themselves from oxidation, and you're burning up and falling apart because you've lost the key protective troops. Okay, that's enough to let you ask questions now.
Right. No, that's a brilliant explanation. Thank you. The study just naturally occurred, I guess, then, as a matter of finding out more information about the body. So it wasn't specifically for a research in Alzheimer's initially. And now that the research is really developing, it's correlated to any breakdown of the body, regardless of what disease you want to call it. Is that correct?
It's like we've gotten down to the gearbox of your body.
Right.
We're no longer looking, if you think of a car, we're no longer looking at the seats and the gas gauge. And we've now taken the engine out. we're looking at the cylinders and the carburetor and saying, what does it make to make it tick? Sorry. And that's why it has implications on everything in your body. There's implications for cancer, for heart disease, for brain diseases. And eventually, I don't think we've plumbed the bottom of the well yet. I think we're going to find that it has huge implications because the all-cause mortality is very robust data. The Aging Catholic Study in Chicago at Rush is a very famous study. There's hundreds of papers that come out on it because there's very few populations that have been followed prospectively for a long period of time. It's sort of like the Framingham study in Boston.
Yes.
You know, where we were looking at the population. In fact, we're looking at the grandchildren from the Framingham study now because that's been going on so long.
Now, just to move into an example, perhaps, from what I've read and my understanding is that they are the main depositories for omega-3s in our body. And with the omega-3s, what happens to them if there aren't plasmalogens? It seems like one could take higher doses, like they might say, oh, you need more omega-3s, and you could take those omega-3s, but if you don't have the plasmogens, then you're not going to get the benefit of them. Is that true, or how is that working?
Exactly true, and omega-3s play a couple roles. They are actually a saturated fat is a straight molecule. And a straight molecule, if you think of a box of pencils, you can't break a box of pencils. You can break one pencil, but you just can't move a box of pencils. But if you put one double bond into that straight fatty molecule of saturated fat and make it, it's called olive oil. Well, you go from suet, which is solid at room temperature, to olive oil, which is quite liquid. But fish oil, which is omega-3 fatty acids, have five double bonds in them, and it becomes a spiral, and it gets more liquid with every double bond, and it becomes super liquid. So that's part of making plasmalogens be super liquid. There's a three-carbon backbone, and the middle molecule has got the fish oil attached to it. So that becomes your reservoir of where you're holding on to fish oil, so that your cells have the omega-3 fat sitting there as part of their membranes that they can use to make anti-inflammatory cytokines. Well, we love you having anti-inflammatory cytokines. That gives you balance. That's part of the preciousness of these plasmalogens. They are your repository for where they're being held. But that's also what makes them so liquid, too, because they've got that liquid quality to them.
Right. Now, our whole system is bathed in these plasmalogens. So when there are local deficits, what does that say to you? And is that the genetic card, would you say?
I think there's about 50,000 PhD theses waiting to be done on plasmalogens because this is such an exciting idea. Why do we become deficient? Probably for hundreds of reasons. We are living in a world with 10,000 chemicals that haven't been studied yet and their impact on us. And we think we're living in a pretty clean world, but we're surrounded, and we surround ourselves with them. You go to the car wash, and they cheerfully hand you this little smelly thing to put on your mirror to make your car smell fresh. You have now voluntarily applied your chemicals to yourself that have all sorts of effects on you. 22 times a day, we expose ourselves to modern chemicals. When we brush our teeth, put a deodorant, take care of our hair, and go to the dry cleaners, put on water repellent, drink water from a plastic bottle, on and on and on.
Right.
Eat an apple without washing it. Eat grapes without cleaning them. Take care of strawberries, the dirty dozen foods, and all the organic chemistry that goes into us. All of those things that are affecting us. We are living in a world of artificial chemicals. Take one look at the energy bar you eat and look at the ingredients in it and the last seven ingredients you've never heard of before.
Right. I've got faith in our audience that they're moving a step beyond that, certainly, or have already. I've read that in Japan, they're using plasmalogens coming from scallops. Is that the
There's
only
actually
place
a study
it comes
done in
from?
Japan. There's a very curious study done in Japan where they said they gave 1 milligram a day of plasmalogen. And their blood level went to normal. And that is so discordant that everybody thinks there must be a typo in that study. There must have been 1 gram. but it's also the physiology is they don't survive your stomach metabolism. And so that study is a sort of red flag standout. Nobody quite believes it. Something's wrong with it. We're not sure what to do with that. I actually forwarded that study to Goodnow myself and said, what do you think of that? And he says, it goes contrary to everybody else's science. We're not sure what to do with it.
Right. But the fact that they are using the scallops to get the plasmalogens, is that the normal? Is plasmalogen usually taken when it is taken as an oil or how?
I personally have an N of one. One person came to me who is taking scallop plasmalogens, and I got his blood test back, and he had drop-dead normal horrible levels. So I only have an N of one, though, and one person is doing that who didn't get any benefit from it. But that matches with what Goodnow's research shows. Oral plasmalogens don't survive your gut from normal animal sources. If you actually stick another fish oil molecule on the first position of the plasmalogen backbone, it will survive your gut. And that's what Goodnow has produced and is now marketing as his supplement. And that is what survives passage to the gut and acid, the acid of your stomach.
Did that give further insights to other supplements, taking them with oil?
That's too open door question. That's a 5-hour conversation.
or it could be yes or no.
Yes. I mean, there are many things that are oil absorbed, like the oil, the fat-dependent vitamins, like vitamin K, D, and A.
Right.
You know.
So what is the plasmagen supplement then?
This is Goodnow's contribution. He was a biochemist. And he said, how do we actually raise blood plasmalogen levels in human beings? This is probably something that's very desirable. It might be the most important vital sign for your brain. We can now measure it. There's a test that can measure it. And we can give you population-based standards. You can go to prodrome.com and see what their test is and find your doctor and see if they'll order it for you. And then how do you replace it? And he says it took him 8 years of biochemistry research to find a product that survives your gut, gets into your blood, and raises your blood level without basically being a food product. And that's what he has made. He has a product called Prodrome Neuro and another product called Prodrome Glia, which is basically taking the plasmalogen molecule and adding other fatty acids onto it that protect it as it goes through the gut and comes into your blood. And then your peroxisomes can take it and process it and make the natural plasmalogen that your body uses. What you're trying to end up with is an elevation of your own natural plasmalogens, which I've been taking for 3 months, and I've been able to show my levels have gone up about 2/3 of the way to normal by taking his supplement.
Now, do you have any research results on people that take it for a while and then stop taking it? Is it something that stimulates the body's own production?
Well, he only came to market in September this last year, so hard to say that yet.
Right, yeah, so this is really hot off the press, needless to say.
Oh, this is hot off the press, and there's anecdotal reports of people getting dramatically better with Parkinson's disease. And Parkinson's disease is another place where you can show low plasma. And that's neurological catastrophe number two after Alzheimer's. If this continues to show improvement in people with neurological diseases like Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, multiple sclerosis, it will be a Nobel Prize in medicine. Those have been insoluble problems. Your brain has such resiliency and such redundancy. You don't get into trouble until you've lost 70% of your synapses. Well, let's catch you when you've lost 30%. You're still pretty functional. You still say the word redundancy once in a while, resilience once in a while. Well, your brain always wants to build redundancy and resilience. And so if you have the building blocks to redo it, you'll recover. So it's not going to take long for this to have very convincing clinical outcomes. So I've told Goodnow I will share every piece of data with him he wants. But I'm at the stage now of only having spoken to 100 clients about it and gotten maybe 100 tests.
Right.
I'm one of his newer customers, but I have already seen improvement in clients. I've had people already say to me, oh my gosh, that feels better. Oh my goodness, I feel like it's made a difference. And I say, well, let's get you tested at 3 months and recover it. My own blood tests for inflammation, which I have spent 10 years trying to get better as a functional medicine doctor, went to completely normal in just 2 months. So my inflammatory markers went to normal. My blood plasmalogen tests were only halfway there. But I'm a pretty big body. I'm a larger person. So I probably need a higher dose, which I've started taking a higher dose.
And you also are someone, by the sounds of it, that is pretty hip to what's going on as far as preventive medicine and diet and those sort of things are. You're not starting from someone who eats at McDonald's.
I'm deeply embedded in Bredesen's pathways to how to prevent Alzheimer's. Bredesen, I think, is America's leading genius at preventing Alzheimer's. Goodenow showed up on one of Bredesen's podcasts, and that's where I picked up and heard about it. But yes, I think Bredesen gives the whole universe of how to repair the broken brain and get folks back to normal. And he introduced Goodenow as one of the key next steps of how do you do the vital signs of your brain. And the vital signs of your brain is a plasmalogen test.
Amazing. Well, it's so beautiful to see that medicine is moving. We're not looking at a disease. We're going to go backwards. And do you have any clues or insights into foods one might eat? You can get good fats from eggs or fish oil, as you mentioned, and other things like this. What kind of correlations are you making? And John, I'd love to hear them, even though I know they are brand new, but maybe just bring them up as questions that you have now that you want to move forward with knowing about this.
You mean for brain health?
For any kind of health. As you mentioned, the brain health is only one piece of this. However, a big piece, of course, but it's just a piece of how it can really improve all kinds of situations that are going on in the body toward an unhealthy direction.
What you'll find is that we are very complicated human beings. And if you look at your genes, again, another huge scientific advance coming forward is the Human Genome Project. There are now multiple companies racing to be first to market. And my belief is that there's a best-of-breed company called Intellex DNA that will take and measure all 8 billion of your SNPs, of your base pairs. They have been the first company I've seen that has taken the you've heard the sequence. There's numbers, and that turns into data, and that turns into information, and that turns into knowledge, and that turns into wisdom. Wisdom is, what are the sensible things you do that are actionable in response to the genes that I have? Well, I have looked at all my genes, and it shows that I have horrible vitamin D genes. I don't manufacture D at all, which explains why I had a vitamin D level of 7 when I first checked it. My belief is everybody should have a vitamin D level of at least 55 and preferably 70 to 80. Well, some people need 50,000 units of D a week to do that because if you look at their genes, you'll see it. Other people will get toxic on that and they'll need 2,000 units a day. So the question is coming out when you ask the question, what are the things people need? It all depends on what the deck of cards they got dealt. If you look at their DNA for their diabetes genes, oh my gosh, there's a whole bunch of genes that say you need this, that, and the other horses. Other people don't. If you look at people's inflammation genes, some people are inflamed all sorts of places, and they better eat a lot of turmeric,
right?
Because that'll help them. SNP stands for single nucleotide polymorphism. So their mom gave them one gene that's present in 20% of the population, but it's not very helpful. Well, their dad also gave them one of those 20%ers, which means they are a 4%. 4% of the population has a double SNP, and they have a mess when it comes to inflammation. The way to get out of that mess is to stimulate that gene by taking a variety of food products that will turn it on. And that's what all those antioxidants or food products use. The problem is only 4% of the population is going to have a double SNP. So only 4% of the population needs to have that particular interaction. Right. What we're doing right now is we're sort of guessing and poking and trying and making experiments on people that work 4% of the time or 10% of the time. And when they work wonderfully.
Right.
When you measure somebody's genes, you can actually guess ahead of time interpret it, come to a conclusion, say, this is how medicine should be practiced. I know what your weaknesses are. That's, I think, going to be the next frontier in medicine. You actually take the Human Genome Project and turn it into wisdom and act on it.
Right. Now, since I would venture to say most people do not have access to this type of thing, whether it be the knowledge isn't in their specific area and or the expense involved in that, what comment would you like to give perhaps in closing, John, about how the body adapts? You said you always have a very low vitamin D count. I mean, do you feel pretty healthy? I have no idea what my genome chart would read or say, and I feel pretty healthy. So I feel like if I have a low this and a high that, somehow my body accommodates that. What do you have to say about that, about the body's ability to accommodate?
I have a couple of saints. I think a couple of saints in my lexicon of people who are just superstars is a guy by the name of Dr. Lustig, who has written a book called Metabolical. And I am a deep fan of his. And I would say your number one thing that all your listeners should do is avoid the number one toxin poison in our society, sugar. Fructose. Fructose, corn syrup, and sugar is in 80% of our prepared foods. And if the one thing you can do to keep yourself healthy is say, I have to find ways of avoiding that poison.
Yes.
Sugar is the engine that's driving everybody's obesity, everybody's heart disease, everybody's diabetes. And we have a long, detailed history of our food industry hiding it and trying to deflect our regulation of it. And read the book Metabolical by Lustig, and you will understand why I say it.
Yes, sounds great. And then you mentioned, was there someone else you wanted to mention? Or
another one of my heroes is Gary Taubes, and has written a book called The Case for Keto. And once you've read those two books, then you don't need to come see me, because you've gotten some wonderful information on how to do it.
Yeah.
And those two books are both entirely readable by the general public. So Metabolical by Bob Lustig and Gary Taubes, The Case for Keto, and they're wonderful, easy-to-read books that will give you great insight.
Beautiful. Well, John, you've been able to share so much insight, and fortunately for all, you are a prolific writer of amazing blogs.
Do you want any of your listeners to link to my www.newsandnutrition.com?
Perfect.
Or on YouTube, I have a YouTube channel where I've put a couple hundred audio or videotapes on YouTube on different topics so people can look at that too and have fun with that.
That's John E. Whitcomb. For information on him or any of our guests, to listen to archives, share resources, or sign up for weekly programming, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. And podcasts are hopefully at your favorite place. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.